Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, today with my fabulous co-host.
And hey, guys, this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
Did I catch a hey there? I liked that. I like that
in style.
I like the flair. It looks good.
Oh,
all right. So you guys were awesome listeners. I love you all. Your sweet words were amazing, and we got a lot of feedback in terms of questions for our Q&A. So good job. A lot of people did their homework. They listened to the end, which is a good sign because we always announced it at the end that we wanted some good questions for the Q&A. So thank you. Did you have anything that you wanted to talk about your last 7 days before we get cracking on this Q&A?
I don't think so. We're still packing and moving. I had so many people actually reach out to me on Instagram asking me where I was moving to in North Carolina. So we're not there yet. We're actually packing in between recording this podcast. So, it'll be nice to have a routine, and, I'm sure I'll have lots of pictures to post on Instagram, but that's it for me right now.
Awesome. Yeah, this weekend was pretty fun. I had a client in California compete at it's the amateur equivalent of the SAC Pro, Spectrum Productions out in Sacramento, California. And I have to say that, you know, there's a lot of negative things that have happened due to COVID, but I would say something that's been super positive is that it allows me the ability to give, like, with a live stream. So I just had to pay $25 and I literally coached all night on Saturday. They did a kind of different thing since California has a lot more restrictions. She went on for pre-judging super late compared to what most pre-judgings would be. And then they did like a back-to-back finals. And so I was like texting her, I was taking screenshots, I was like giving feedback. And I was screaming at my phone. My daughter came out of her room and she's like, "What's wrong, Mom?" And I was like, "My client just got in the overall pose down at her first show." So yeah, she did very well. She was top three in all four of her categories. And she got moved to splitting center of the overall pose down of the novice, but just missed it. So the girl that she was splitting center with ended up winning the overall, but I was like super animated.
That's so exciting.
So it was really fun. I mean, it shows you that you can, you know, be long distance and still be as successful with coaching somebody, whether or not you're there in person. And, you know, with how much our team's growing, I mean, we have, you know, a client in Switzerland that's competing in France, and it's just so cool to be able to connect with people around the world. And we appreciate all of our listeners supporting the podcast because it's been able to, you know, extend and grow our Glam Girl family internationally. Mm-hmm. So that's been really exciting as well. So should we start with the first question?
Yeah. Do you want me to read it?
Sure.
Okay. So we have a listener who asked, how do you approach women who are postmenopausal given their hormone levels? Do you recommend that they see a specialist for hormone replacement or some other approach to help with muscle growth and weight loss?
Yes, and I've had several versions of this question come about on my DMs. And what I always tell people, I'm not one of those coaches that's going to work outside of my scope of practice. I'm not going to say I'm going to fix people. I'm not going to say that I'm going to interpret your lab results and fix you, because that is not within my my abilities in terms of, I am not a licensed practitioner. I am not a doctor, as I always say. So
yes.
I know enough to be dangerous. I can look at blood work and be like, okay, you might want to, you know, like look into talking to an endocrinologist, or you might want to talk to, you know, a hormone doctor, or you might want to like take a look at what your blood sugars are and things like that. So I know enough to kind of know like some red flags and some things to test for, but I am not, like I said, a doctor, a medical professional. So those kind of things need to be managed with prescriptions, and you need to have accurate blood work so that you're taking the correct amount for your body. So just like we tailor our nutrition plans and our strength training plans, because we are licensed certified nutritionists and personal trainers, you know, everybody's body is different and unique, and so that needs to be addressed by a medical professional. But I definitely think that it's something that once you are in menopause, your ovaries stop producing your sex hormones. So when your adrenal glands kick in as your backup, once the ovaries have aged, it is important, especially if you're doing like contest prep, because the adrenals take quite a hit with, mm-hmm. you know, heavy cardio, dieting, you know, lower calories, things like that. So they're just more susceptible to having to take care of that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I agree with you. And since I work for your company, I never try and take on any type of medical questions. But I have noticed, especially for women that are getting older, that utilizing a medical professional when it comes to your hormones has really, really helped with their progression and their prep. So, you know, I've had a couple clients that have really struggled with body recomp. They decided to get their hormones evaluated, utilize, you know, like a hormone specialist, and have like very strategic approaches to both their progesterone, their testosterone, their estrogen levels. And it's really helped give a little bit of an edge when it comes to trying to recomp them. But I would never say it's the end all be all. I think you can't beat out nutrition. You can't beat out exercise, sleep, recovery. But I definitely think it's something to consider if you are someone that's going through menopause or in the later years and wanting to compete. It's something to look into.
Yeah. And it just helps a lot of clients that get stuck and they hit that plateau. That's when we kind of recommend and refer out. And then we work with a hormone specialist, specifically with our team, that's really helped our athletes get great results, because mm-hmm. they not only go over the blood work with the athlete and then like what they would recommend from a doctor's perspective, but then we can listen in and any kind of nutrient deficiencies, mm-hmm. things that we need to address as a nutritionist, like if the person has high cholesterol, high blood sugars, things that we can address with their nutrition. And then also like with cortisol and things of that nature, we can really work with the client on addressing like adrenal health and mm-hmm. managing stress. So that's been very helpful to have that relationship. It's definitely taken our client results to the next level, I think. And I think that you're missing the boat if you don't address that as a contest prep coach. You need to be able to have a resource, even if you're not qualified to do it. You need to be able to mm-hmm. refer out so that they can get the appropriate help that they do need.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's even changes outside of recomping. I had one athlete who told me she finally feels like she has energy. Another client, and this is something I just wanted to put out there, is sometimes it takes a little bit of time too, just with there's not like instantaneous results. I've had a client utilize hormone replacement therapy for, you know, almost a year. And we saw steady changes, but then I think once her body had like caught up to the type of therapy that this professional was doing with her, it really started to take off. So just be patient with the process. Like anything, I think in this sport, it takes time.
Yeah. And the same can be said with like thyroid hormone as well. It definitely is a process, but it will help people in the long term, you know, be able to build muscle and have a stronger metabolism as well. So should I read the next question?
Sure.
And then I'll have you answer it. Okay. How do you deal with the guilt of eating any treats in your improvement season? I'm in peak week right now, and I'm already stressing about going off my meal plan, even though that weekly untracked meal is needed as a busy mom and a husband who like loves to make homemade pasta. Ha ha ha. So what are your thoughts there, Chris?
So I think for some competitors, there's that like huge excitement of all the things that they want to eat after a show. And then there's the other part of the population that's super nervous, either because of a past experience or they don't want to undo the work that they've done. I think the most important part is knowing that there's a transition from your, contest prep dieting season into your improvement season. And there's something very healthy about having the flexibility with your diet. So a lot of times I have competitors that still eat the same foods, through their dieting season and their improvement season. They just want to eat the same thing. So I try and encourage them incorporate one additional food, even if it's like a different vegetable or a different carbohydrate, just to give yourself some variety. But I think like the part you don't have to do like the crazy like eating the cookies, eating the cake, like though you don't have to do any of those things in your improvement season. I think if this person enjoys having pasta with her husband, doing like a slow introduction to see how her digestion does with it, and just take small steps, I think is probably the best approach. What would you say, Amy?
Yeah, I think everybody kind of tolerates gluten a little bit differently and sugar and dairy and things like that. So you just have to know what your body is sensitive to and making sure that, you're fueling yourself with foods that, service you well that will allow you in the improvement season to make, the strides towards what you want because you still need to eat optimally. You're just probably going to be getting more calories. It doesn't detract from the fact that, especially if you're a person that needs to build muscle in improvement season, you do need to, make sure that your macros are on point. It'll just be maybe more. And then there are some people that I feel like mentally, I think that they need an untracked meal. And depending on what your composition is, what your next step goal is, how many calories you're dieting on is a huge factor. So there's a lot that goes into it, what type of reverse you're doing. There's a lot of different strategies, a lot of tools in our tool belt as a coach with calculated refeeds, diet breaks, the 24 or 48 hour refeeds. And then some people I think just need an untracked meal for their mental space to recharge, where they just need a free meal. I just, if they're gonna do that though, I always recommend that they eat all of their meals before entering that meal, just because I'll have a client that will do an untracked meal early, like for breakfast, and then the whole day just kind of goes to the, F it mentality type of thing. Or they'll like bank their macros because they know the untracked meal's coming and they don't eat enough protein and they haven't drank enough water. They're coming into that, meal ravenous, and then it just sets them up for disaster. So I think you just have to, again, it's the unicorn prep. Everyone's an individual and everybody has a different need, like from their social aspect, from their mental aspect, and then their physical aspect. So, I think that it's just very context dependent, but talk with your coach. Like the biggest advice I would give for this particular individual is to have a game plan. If you are in peak week, you need to talk with your coach about what your next goal is, and you need to ask the good questions about how your reverse is going to go, what their plans are for you moving forward, what's important to you in this reverse. Like if you want to do a recovery diet where you're just like over it and you want to go. You don't care that you're putting on body fat, but you just want to get back to a higher caloric intake, or if you want to do like get back to maintenance and then a gradual increase as you continue to recomp. These are just conversations. I think the biggest thing is just communicate, and don't stress. Like it's better to talk about it with your coach, and hopefully, I mean, if they're a good coach, they'll have a plan for you.
Yeah, I like that you said that too. And I hopefully, the coach is able to give you guidelines on how to approach the untracked meal, because I think everybody has a different idea of what that looks like. And if they can give you a good example, you'll know that you're following the What's suggested to continue towards the goal that you have in mind?
Okay. So similar yet not similar in terms of like masters competitors. This particular person is in their early 50s and they recently got back into competing. Her last competition, she was very, very lean, like 8.3% body fat. That's crazy. But she noticed that her waist was not nearly as small as when she had competed in her mid 30s. So she was really frustrated. She's like, is this common? And then is it age related or due to me having a child? And she just said, my hormones are in check. I'm on HRT and get checked regularly. Any thoughts on what I can do? And good that you're getting like your labs done, your HRT, you're getting all of that monitored. That's great. I would say that, so when it comes to storing body fat, it all comes down to, are you in a deficit? Are you, eating the amount that's correct that will put you in a deficit? Are you moving enough? And then from there, the age does play a factor. So as estrogen declines in the female body, and I've noticed this with my clients anecdotally, they do start to store more fat in their stomach area, in their midsection, versus their legs. So if you've heard us talk about estrogen dominance, estrogen, high levels of estrogen, fat will collect in the thighs, but like hips and triceps. And then if you've noticed on men that they don't have very much estrogen, a lot of their fat collects in their midsection. So when a person goes through menopause, then they start storing belly fat in their stomach. However, what I've noticed with my clients that are in that situation, it's still the same thing as losing weight in your thighs and your triceps and your stomach. It's the caloric deficit that you're creating, but it's just the hormone shift. And then as you age, it's harder to maintain muscle, so your metabolic rate, can tend to slow down if you don't have as much muscle, because it is a very metabolic tissue. Did you have anything to add on that, Chris?
Well, I think when you asked some good questions of this athlete as well too about her training, if you want to talk about that.
So, I mean, I also incorporated, so I wanted to make sure that I knew and I understand the full story because age doesn't always play the factor, especially when it comes to like your waist size. So I followed up with her on DM and asked, are you wearing a leather weight belt when you're weight training? Because your core muscles contract every time you pick up a weight. And so if we keep the weight belt on, they're still contracting, but they're just not expanding. So I always give the example of like a CrossFitter. If you look at a CrossFitter, they do a lot of compound lifts, like, powerlifting moves like deadlift, snatch, all those things. They have a very blocky, like brick-like midsection because, all of those muscles around the spine are like stakes in a tent. So your obliques in particular, they get very strong and they expand every time you put that load, like if you're doing a back squat on your spine. So when you have the belt, it keeps them from expanding out. And then the same with like a waist trainer, similar things. I was asking her about that. And then other things too that I've noticed that help my clients' waist come down quite a bit are ab vacuums, getting the transverse abdominis stronger and pulling it in towards the spine. And doing those daily helps a lot. And then just like eliminating inflammatory foods, dairy, soy, gluten, sugar, even like artificial sweeteners and diet pops can really contribute to inflammation in the midsection.
I think you gave all the right answers.
Thanks. And she did mention that she isn't as diligent. She wasn't this prep like as diligent with the waist trainer and the belt. So that would make
Yeah,
sense.
all those little things, they do make a difference, and I feel like everybody's chasing that tiny waist, especially in the bikini category. So Just check off all the boxes. And I do like that you mentioned about like the training your abdominals with like the ab vacuums, because I do think that is something that was that shouldn't be neglected, especially when you're up there posing. And you said that you've noticed huge differences in inches just from people practicing that on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, one client in particular, she cannot do a waist trainer due to gut issues, which it is an extreme sport. I'm like, giving the disclaimer that waist trainers are not for everyone. So I would never push that on someone. It's someone's choice to do it. Some people it doesn't bother them, some people it does. But she in particular cannot do a waist trainer. So she's seen some or her lowest waist measurements since she started doing ab vacuums. And she does utilize a leather belt. And she's definitely a good one on no inflammatory foods, no artificial sweeteners. So we could basically pinpoint it because all things the same, she added in ab vacuums and her waist got the smallest it's ever been.
That's awesome. Good.
Oh, I lost you.
Do you maybe the next question?
Say something again because I can't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Okay, yes, now I can.
I'm just in the Bermuda Triangle of this moving situation. Do you want me to read the next question?
Sure.
Okay. We have a listener that asked if your pre-workout meal is still hanging out in your stomach by the time the workout is over, how important is it to be quick about a post-workout meal?
Do you want to take that one?
Sure. So I would ask a lot more questions to piggyback off of this. I definitely think, we talk about nutrient timing for your pre-workout, having some carbohydrates and protein before, and then your post-workout also utilizing protein and carbohydrates. I think I would be interested to know like how long her workout has been, and like the other timing of her nutrients. So I know that for the anabolic window after your workout, when you are most insulin sensitive, it's good to get in the majority of your carbohydrates 30 minutes to an hour after your workout. So for me, I would tell her just to continue that, making sure she gets her po post-workout within that time frame. But what would you say to that, Amy?
Yeah, I think it depends on, like you said, you'd have to ask some more questions. So, when is she having her pre-workout meal? How close is it to the workout? Is she waiting a long time to go to the gym after she's eaten it? Because you're stringing that long. So, you muscle protein synthesis will spike if you get that protein bolus in pre-workout and then you start lifting. And then to just kind of repair and to mitigate protein degradation, you're going to want to add the carbohydrates in for recovery purposes. And so you're going to also want another protein bolus, usually like a fast digesting one is best. And that would be, it just depends on how long you're going, like you said, like the length of the workout and things like that. We usually just give the guideline within 30 minutes, but if it's been a long time since you've eaten, I would try to get it like immediately after. It sounds like this person's still kind of full from their pre-workout meals, so maybe they're eating right before they work out and then they have a really short workout. You can probably go a little bit longer, I would say. Don't wait more than 2 to 3 hours from when you ate before the workout is probably a good guideline.
Yeah, I would suggest off of the information to, either eat your pre-workout meal and wait a little bit to then hit the gym so that you've kind of like stretched that time frame. Your body has time to, like not too long, but digest your food to power your workout. So maybe she's like eating it and then going right to the gym. Or just to look at what you're eating prior to your workout. If you're eating too much protein, eating too many calories, maybe you need to just bring it down a little bit so that you are able to utilize the best, post-workout meal as well.
Yeah, and maybe like a quicker carb, like a fruit or like a whey protein. isolate.
Yeah.
So it's just not sitting so heavy on your stomach.
That's a good suggestion. I like that.
Awesome. Okay. So the next question is kind of a long one. So I'm going to just recap it. Basically, this person's saying, you know, they're mentioning the cardiovascular, the American Council for American Heart Association recommends 20 to 30 minutes of cardio exercise 5 to 7 days a week. So they're giving the reference of 150 minutes of cardio a week is very heart healthy. And then she was kind of asking how it translates, in both off season contest prep and how, if you are wanting to do high intensity interval training, is it still kind of that same guideline that the American Heart Association recommends? If so, what's the total time of high intensity and how much? So this is a very loaded question because we are a specific sport, whereas this recommendation is given by just for general heart health to Gen Pop population. And we are elite athletes that are training for a specific goal. So if you listen to our cardio episode, you'll know that people that are mesomorphs that have a lot of muscle that don't really need to worry about keeping muscle on can do steady state very easily. Especially if they have too much muscle, it can be good in breaking down the muscle because steady state cardio is training those endurance muscles, those red tissue that are smaller. Hence think of a marathon runner. So those are your endurance athletes. Those are your endurance muscles you'd be training. And then with HIIT training, you are training the fast twitch muscles. So those are a little bit bigger in size. This is a great workout for an ectomorphic person that loses, you know, is a hard gainer. And then it's also good for, you know, putting on shape and size because you are training similar muscles, the white fiber, the bulkier, quick twitch fibers that you'll see like in a sprinter. So it's kind of a loaded question, but I, a very context dependent, of course, as to what kind of cardio I'm going to choose for my client. But you have to look at it like with HIIT, 30 minutes is a lot. You're probably not actually doing an actual HIIT if you're going for 30 minutes. That would be the absolute max that I would ever give someone. You know, 10 to 20 minutes, like 3 to 4 days a week is a really good just like general guideline for HIIT training. But you have to have the caveat that it needs to be well fed. You need to be able to have enough calories to recover and things like that. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's, like you said, context dependent. And, you know, what recommendations are given for a general population are not going to be the same as an athlete in any sport, not just bodybuilding. So like your basketball players, your NFL players, like everybody's going to train differently for the goals that they have in mind. And that doesn't necessarily mean that because they're not executing what's recommended for cardiovascular health, that they don't have good heart health. So I think it's kind of tough to take general guidelines. And like you said, this sport's super niche. So there's other ways to make sure that you're healthy while you're doing your training. And it is dependent on the athlete, especially their body type. So I think you did a good job summarizing it.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And I mean, the average person should get around 8,000 to 10,000 steps. It's about 3 miles a day of just like general walking. So that's going to be at least 30 minutes. It's very low intensity. Cardio, it's not really like, but I mean, I have ectomorphs that don't do any cardio at all. And, you know, their hearts are healthy because they have great intensity when they're weight training and they kind of pay attention to heart rates and things like that.
Yes.
So, okay. We are running out of time, but we do have two more questions. So we'll try to be quick. As far as the upcoming year in 2022, now that we have had the Arnold and the Olympia, what do we see as trends moving forward?
So the biggest trends, there's two that I'm seeing for bikini, is I'm seeing a big differentiation between bikini and wellness. I think since we've had more wellness competitors and shows come up, There is some big differences as far as like how much muscularity they want to see in bikini. But I also think a thing that I've noticed a lot, and you've mentioned this before, Amy, is the glutes that are coming in for a bikini. So why don't you elaborate from there?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at Miss Bikini Olympia, so Jen Dory, she has a very 3D glute structure and she has really nice shoulders. So she's that perfect hourglass with the tight waist. Even if you look at Laura Lee, who's much taller, came in second place, she has very round shoulders, very round glutes, and a small waist. And if you kind of look at that top three, like Ashley Kay, they just have a very 3D look to their glutes with a good V taper at the bottom, what we call like the glute ham tie-in. And I heard Ashley talking about her feedback from Sandy was that she needed wider, like she needs to widen her rear delts and lats. And remember we talked about that, how that's why I thought that maybe she wasn't balanced from top to bottom. So again, it's just back to that criteria of you want to be able to fold them in half. On the front pose, there should be that S curve. They should look like an hourglass, and just match top to bottom in general. So I think, that's been pretty much a common trend throughout. But I think that, like you said, we're finding that the legs are a lot smaller. It's kind of like an ice cream cone. Definitely due to, wellness coming into play. There are just really no, I mean, the legs are pretty small, and the
And the
butts are
lats
pretty
are
big.
the, yes, the butts are, they're out there.
Yes.
But the lats as well too. I think like bikini's very, it's getting more specific in its criteria. Because we had that whole year of everyone lat flaring to have like that big taper. But it was like mirroring some resemblance to figure. So I think they've really done a good job of like individualizing the category. I think like having those other female categories up there has really helped as well too.
Yep. And then the last one is a pretty short one, so I'll just end with this one. What supplement do you recommend for caffeine detox and how long do you recommend? And I would recommend Adrenal Restore. And if you can go on it for 6 weeks without caffeine, excellent. It's going to be very effective on mending your adrenal glands, resetting those receptor sites for caffeine. If you can go 6 weeks, but the shorter duration that is still highly effective. And it will help you to not have to continue to keep increasing your dosage to feel an effect would be about 14 days, so about 2 weeks if you can hang. But the Adrenal Restore definitely helps with like a lot of the side effects that you can get, like with severe headache, fatigue, things like that. So anything to add on that?
And Adrenal Restore is from First Form.
And we can put the link in the description box. So,
Perfect.
yeah, if you are interested in that, you can order it there. So, with that, we are done with our Q&A. Thank you so much, all of you, for your suggestions and continue to keep giving us feedback. We just love hearing from you what you want to hear. So, we'll do more episodes like this if we get some more questions as well. So, any kind of ratings, reviews, we are a non-ad podcast. That's those ratings and reviews really help other people find us, and we try to stay ad-free for you guys because we want to just add value to you. And so, all we ask is that you pay it forward by sharing it with someone else. So, if you would like to tag us on your story, we are at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini on Instagram. And you can apply for the team by going to glamgirlbikini.com and hitting the Get Started button. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.